Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble. Sorry, I thought we started.
Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict podcast, not the Avengers. Next week, just a 1 week delay until the Avengers. Hold your breath if you can. Matt, would you like to explain why we're not doing the Avengers?
I haven't seen it yet.
It's a reasonable... I think that's the first half of an excuse. I think the second half is, why have you not seen the Avengers?
I don't know. I organised with a group of friends to see A Quiet Place, not realising that that was like the day the Avengers came out.
You were like, wow, we've got great seats. I can't believe the cinema is this empty.
But what I mean, and then I just haven't like found people that haven't seen the Avengers. It seems like everyone saw it that weekend.
Here's my theory as to why you haven't seen it. You're an adventure seeker. You're a thrill seeker. You want to feel alive, that rush of being on the edge. And
yes,
bungee jumping and skydiving is not so much your thing as waiting a week in a waiting a week to see arguably the biggest box office film of the year and see if you can not get it spoiled.
And I don't have it spoiled yet, so I'm not mentioning it to kids at school. I'm avoiding just bringing it up as a topic of conversation because some kids can just, they find it hard to contain things. So I wait till I see it, then I'll pop up to school and go, hey guys, saw the Avengers last night. Pretty good, eh?
Just,
or not good, depending on what I think of it.
just think of the emotions, the roller coaster of emotions as Matt scrolls through Facebook or steps onto a public train. You're a madman. But we're not talking, we will be talking about Avengers very soon, but this week I think we've got just as good a podcast.
A film I was more excited to see. Ooh. The Avengers. Yeah.
Isle of Dogs. Matt, why were you so excited to see Isle of Dogs?
Well, this is Wes Anderson's next movie, and I quite like, as a white privileged male, I love Wes Anderson.
Yeah, it hits all the key demographics. And you're a fan of Fantastic Mr. Fox, if I recall.
Yeah, I also think, the Fantastic Mr. Fox was the first Wes Anderson film I saw that I really liked. And I was like, boy, like, animation lends itself, stop-motion animation lends itself very well to his style of filmmaking and his storytelling devices. And so this was his next stop-motion animation film, so that made me a bit more intrigued.
Yeah, he's been wasting his time paying actors a full rate to turn up in costume rather than just in pajamas to do voiceovers. But he's back to where Matt thinks he excels, although you really like Moonrise Kingdom too.
Yeah, I love Moonrise Kingdom, yeah.
Well, very good. Yeah, I'm a big Wes Anderson fan. We might, maybe in housekeeping or the end of the podcast, we'll talk more generally about Wes Anderson, and we'll focus on Isle of Dogs for now. But yeah,
yes.
I was a fan. Perhaps I converted Matt. Is that, or maybe Moonrise Kingdom converted Matt, and Wes Anderson gets more credit than that for me. But
yeah.
We'll split it. We'll split it 50-50. Yeah. So Isle of Dogs. What's the premise? What's the premise of Isle of Dogs? I think we're going to do a spoiler-free podcast.
Yeah, we won't have any spoilers.
So no spoiler alert. We're just going to give you the premise.
Yeah. Okay, so the is it the mayor or the prime minister? I don't know. Someone in government in Japan decides to... what's wrong? All the dogs are getting sick. Right?
Yes.
So they decide, let's just get all the dogs and put them on an island. Just all the dogs, you're out of here. Let's just get everyone on the Isle of Dogs. Did we like this idea? Do we think this is a good solution, Jonathan, to the problem of sick dogs? Let's just get rid of all the dogs.
Oh. Well, there's nothing privileged white people love more than dogs. So, to be honest, I was rooting for the dogs. I thought it doesn't seem like a very considerate thing to do, does it? Well, I don't know. We heard a lot about, you know, bird flu. What did we do with that? Did we put all of them on an island?
It's very hard for birds because they can fly. Very hard to get. Like, you need to clip all the wings, and I don't know. Do you need to regularly clip wings? I don't really know birds and how they work.
Yeah, perhaps there was more. More depth, like more for them to explore if he'd have done an Isle of Birds.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's where he started. He got the idea from bird flu and then ran into a whole bunch of complications and said, you know what, if these birds couldn't fly, this would be a much easier film to make, so we can either do Isle of Emus or change it to Isle of Dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nah, I wasn't a fan. It didn't seem nice. So here's the thing. If they sent them all to Bora Bora, that would be great. They could, like, swim around, you know, chase the little fish. There's, I'm sure, the tropical fruit that falls off the trees. The dogs would love that. But that's not the kind of island they got sent to, was it, Matt?
It was Trash Island.
Trash Island.
The dogs are being treated like trash, I guess.
Hmm.
So clearly we're on the side of the dogs. The dogs are good. This guy running the show in Japan, whatever the city is, seems like he's a pretty evil guy. He's always hanging out with cats too. Maybe a red flag. This guy is more of a cat guy, which might be a bit why he's trying to get rid of the dogs.
Are you more of a cat or dog person, Matt?
Look, I don't hate either, but I'm more of a dog person.
Hmm. So if
dogs
you...
Dogs are a bit more fun and, like, a bit more playful and friendly. I like cats when, like, you just... Maybe someone's got a cat at home and you're, like, just sitting watching TV and it'll come and curl up in your lap. That's sort of nice. But I feel like cats are a lot more hit and miss than dogs.
So you're okay with cats being allowed to stay on the mainland? Like, if you were the mayor of Australia, you wouldn't have all the cats sent to Tasmania?
No.
Okay. So that's a weak stance on cats. As a pro-dog person, you've taken a very cat-friendly stance.
Yeah, okay. So you're a dog guy?
Yeah, I like dogs, although I feel like a lot of the qualities that, I don't know, they have such, maybe we'll talk about this in some of the characters. Dogs have such unique personalities. Like, you know, in all the pharmaceutical commercials where they need to fill time with sort of just generic happy B-roll while they read over all of, like, the horrible side effects that this drug might give you, it's always like people like throwing a frisbee to a dog and like bringing it back to them. I had two dogs, and if I threw a frisbee or any item for them to go fetch, they would just look at me and say, well, not say it, but their facial expression would convey, why did you do that? Now you're going to have to walk over there and get it. My dogs never fetched anything.
Yeah.
But they were very cute. Very cute.
Yeah, dog fetches stuff. Uh-huh. It likes to tug of war. It doesn't like to give the thing back, though. It likes to tug of war.
Well, of course. Of course he doesn't want to give it back. He's the one that put in the effort to go get it.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah.
He's just smart. Some dogs will go get it 5, 6, 7 times. Whereas your dog, he goes, if I give it back, I know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, that's fit. That's very fit.
Smart dog. Maybe he would come up with a plan to get off the island. If you were a cat person, I feel like your dog would be one of the ones to try and get off the island.
Yeah. It's not a movie for cat people, is it? Like, These cat people are quite sinister and evil and trying to, like, just kill dogs.
Yeah, if you thought the current political climate was divisive, just wait until you see Isle of Dogs.
Yeah. Well, I do think that is interesting, because I do think the film is trying to address maybe a political climate that is quite divisive and how fear can be used. Like, so, like, the people in power in this film seem to be using the fear of dogs to keep power, and to keep people following them, rather than actually look for a solution to the health problems of the dogs.
Yeah, the opposition, they're weak on dogs. You need someone that's strong on dogs.
And there's a scientist guy who's like, actually, I think I've thought of a cure. And you're like, yeah, don't listen to that guy. That guy's crazy.
It was funny that they didn't seem to be, like, opposing political parties. You had a mayor and then some scientists.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, I did feel like the film was giving off some sort of Trump vibes in terms of, like, commenting on maybe... and this probably doesn't apply to America, but other countries in the world, how Australia would apply to how refugees are being thought of. All these guys, they're going to ruin everything. Let's just keep them off on an island somewhere.
Yeah, I think it touches on some interesting themes. What are some of the other things that it... perhaps raises in the film?
Cute dogs that are funny.
Well, we do get introduced to an interesting sort of ragtag team of dogs. They're all exiled. They're all diseased with dog... What's it called? It's not dog flu, but it's something like that. Maybe it was dog flu. Anyway, but what do we think of these characters? Who we got? Rex, King, Duke, Boss, and Chief.
Yes. So I like the crew. I think the crew's good. If you listen to this podcast for a while, you'll know one of my favorite things in movies is ragtag teams. I love a good ragtag team trying to plot a plan or go on an adventure or escape something. So
I was rooting for the corporation IOI in Ready Player One, but Matt was backing the ragtag team of kids.
Well, sorry, you always back a ragtag team of kids.
No, I said in Ready Player One, I was rooting for the IOI corporation, but you were rooting for the ragtag team of kids.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, okay, let's run through this team. So we've got Chief. He sort of joins the team late, doesn't he? And he sort of becomes a bit of a big voice amongst the team, right? Like, he thinks about things a bit differently.
Yeah, he seems to be kind of the most skeptical or battle-hardened, in a way, of the group.
He doesn't want to help the humans. He's like, they're against us. We're on our own, guys. We're the dogs. We just got to look out for us.
Voiced by Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, a favorite of a Screen Verdict Award winner, an Emmy winner, and Tony winner, Bryan Cranston.
In that order of importance.
Yes. And, I think this might be his first Wes Anderson movie, so that's sort of cool.
Ooh, yeah. Well, some of the other dogs, Big Buddies, Big Buds, perhaps man's best friend, or at least Wes Anderson's best friends, Edward Norton plays Rex.
Yeah. What's Rex's story? Which one's he again?
I don't know his backstory, but I feel like Rex was kind of like the straight man, in that, like, I feel like he sort of said what people were thinking at the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Rex, let me see, I'm going to check the wiki page, see if there's any other things about, it's taking a while to load.
Does Rex, the character of Rex the probably third most important dog in the film. Does he have his own Wikipedia page?
Well, it's like the Isle of Dogs wiki, which seems very incomplete, to be honest. I think, like, there's any Isle of Dogs fanatics listening, you can go and... he's more passive, but he's the first to suggest they rescue the pilot, and he's the guy who insists on democracy a lot. He's a big fan of democracy and the group voting on everything. He loves the group votes. He loves the poll. He'd be the guy always setting up the poll on the Facebook event.
Yeah.
His owners had a cushion and a heat lamp. So his backstory isn't hugely developed, Rex, is it? So let's go to one of the other dogs. King?
King, voiced by Bob Balaban.
Yes. His floppy is... Most of his description is about his appearance. And he was, though, a former celebrity, a star from the doggy chomp commercials, a company that I imagine is not doing well with all the dogs being banned.
Yeah, you know, they're thinking, like, ugh, we really should have diversified into cat food earlier.
Yeah. So King, the former sort of star of the group, obviously having an adjustment, he's had a bit of a dog celebrity life to something else. Were there any other dogs? There's two more in the crew.
Yeah, well, this isn't one of them, but someone that sort of had a similar story was it Nutmeg, the show dog?
Oh, yes, Nutmeg. I would have liked to see more of Nutmeg in the movie.
That is kind of an interesting transition. Out of all the dogs, she was probably least environmentally... prepared to live on Trash Island. And yet somehow she maintained her show dog looks. So she must be very resourceful. I don't know where she's finding all that doggy shampoo on Trash Island.
Yeah, she's got a hook up somewhere. She's great. She's a bit of a dalliance with, or at least, dalliance probably is the right word. There's some chemistry with her and Chief, which I quite enjoyed. I thought that was a nice little side romance.
Yes. It's a
game with Wes Anderson. Like, his romances are so frank. The way, like, the guy likes the girl and the girl likes the guy talk to each other is just so earnest and frank and, like, to the point. We're often in life and particularly in other TV shows, like, you have a whole season of two people not saying what they think about each other.
Yeah. He does have a very distinct feel and sense of dialogue. Like, two people will interact for the first time and say, I like you. I like you too. But I don't know if I love you yet. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait. Like,
yeah. Now, and then there'll be something like I can juggle bowling balls, like something like that. Just like something so random.
That's cool. I have to go to lacrosse practice now.
Just
walk away.
Yeah.
In like a mid shot in slow motion. Very good.
We've got two more dogs to get to.
Each with less individual characteristics than the last.
There's Boss, voiced by Bill Murray, one of our favourites.
Yeah. This isn't particularly related to the movie, but Bill Murray, don't you think if you took a lot of Bill Murray stories and retold those stories to someone without mentioning the fact that it was Bill Murray, the person's reaction would be like, wow, that guy's a dick. But because it's Bill Murray, people are like, ha, 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 that's a crazy, that's hilarious. Classic Bill.
I love Bill Murray, but I completely agree.
Oh, this guy got drunk and stole a golf cart and drove it down a highway. And you're like, wow, that seems reckless. It was Bill Murray. Ah, oh, the classic Bill. That's amazing. Oh, no one else does. No one but Bill.
This guy in his 50s went to a college frat party and just started making people like tequilas or like his special drink. Oh, that sounds concerning and creepy. It was Bill Murray. Oh, what a character.
Oh, man, the wild man of Hollywood. Love it. Love the guy.
But we do love Bill
Murray. But we do love Bill Murray. Did we love him as Boss? What did we like about Boss?
He was cool. He had a baseball jersey. I feel like Boss wasn't as fleshed out as you would have liked Boss to be.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, you really can't have an animated film last more than 2 hours long.
Yeah, I guess so.
There's only so much Boss backstory that could survive the cutting room floor.
Yeah. And is the last dog in this ragtag team of dogs, is that Jeff Goldblum? Is that the one?
Yes, as Duke.
So, what was Duke's deal? There's not a wiki page for him.
I have no idea. But here's a Jeff Goldblum story.
Okay. I'll try to research Duke.
So, I got on a plane. I was flying from LAX to Portland. And as I'm boarding the plane, I notice in first class is Jeff Goldblum. And so, people are kind of like stopping and smiling because they're like, wow, it's Jeff Goldblum. So I'm like, I gotta say something. This is my chance to say something to Jeff Goldblum. So I stop and I say, I loved your appearance on Top Gear. To which he pauses, deeply confused, takes a couple of seconds, realizes what the hell I'm talking about, and then says, oh, thanks. And that's my Jeff Goldblum story, which I think is great because why on earth would I reference his appearance on Top Gear? This guy has been in Jurassic Park, Independence Day, The Fly. He's on one of our favorite shows, Portlandia. He was probably flying to Portland to film Portlandia. And yet,
yeah.
I referenced him being a guest on an English car show in one episode about 5 years ago. So maybe he'll remember me if he sees me again, because he'll be like, he's that damn Top Gear kid.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's to be remembered if you ask something different to what everyone else is asking. I think this is a good celebrity tip if you ever meet a celebrity. It's don't compliment them or say something about the thing they're most known for. Like, the thing they're getting, or like, you know, like, you know, someone from Star Wars or whatever, you go, oh, you're great at Star Wars. They hear that every day. Try to think of something that they're not that well known for, but they might be super proud of. Because I feel like they're going to really appreciate being asked about that.
Unless you think their career is sort of getting off track. Like, if you meet James Franco, just say to Franco, look, James Franco, I'm a big fan, and I've seen everything you've done, and to be honest, all of your indie films, everything, you know, all the plays you've done, your films based on Faulkner novels, I hate them. I hate them all. But you know what I loved? Pineapple Express. That was great. You got any more of them in you?
Yeah, you don't do
but yes, I'm sure if I'd have said to Jeff Goldblum, Jeff Goldblum, I love Jurassic Park, in his mind, he's like, yeah, everyone did.
being so obscure. I found a 10-second YouTube video on Duke, so I can play that and just see what it tells us about this character that we love so much from the film.
All right. Pandora's box. Let's open it.
Oh, what? Sorry?
I just said it could be Pandora's box, but let's open it. There you go. The perfect line to sum up both Duke's role in the film and our opinion on him.
Okay. So, Jonathan, I was going to ask a question, but this will be a fun little thing for listeners. If you could have one of these dogs as a pet, which dog would you have?
Which one of these dogs is responsible for the least sexual misdemeanors? You know, I guess it depends on the situation. I feel like if I was on Trash Island, if I was on the Isle of Dogs, I think I'd want Chief. Because Chief seems very practical, he's very resourceful, and he likes to scrap. He's probably the best fighter in the bunch. But if I feel like I was back on the mainland and this was in a hunky-dory situation without dog flu, maybe Rex. He seems very amenable. He seems very level-headed. He seems to like the democratic process, which I agree with. So I think those would be my two choices.
I think I'm probably the same as you, actually. I think it's between those two dogs for sure. And I think maybe Chief. I feel like he was a bit of a slightly cuter dog in my mind than Rex. But on temperament, I think they're both pretty close.
Chief has that sort of, he's tough on the outside, but I bet I can get him to crack. I know he's just a big ball of mush waiting to be cuddled if you'll let me.
Yeah, so I guess if I was I think I'd be like you. It was just like, I'm going to pick up a dog now to take home. I probably think Rex would be a bit less work, so I'd probably get Rex. But I think Chief's the kind of dog I'd want to visit. I'd want you to get Chief, and I can come around and visit Chief at your place.
Like the kind of kid that I wouldn't want that kid as my own kid, but he'd be great as a nephew.
Yeah. So how about this, Jono? I've got a game for you, okay? A competition between us.
Okay.
I saw this movie with my friends, sort of your friends, I guess, but probably more my friends, Brendan and Jasmine. You know those guys?
Of course. The Taylors, the T-Dogs.
Yep. Brothers and yep, the T-Dogs. The brothers is the team. We've seen the last three Wes Anderson movies together.
It's a bit of a
pattern. Anyway, they're massive dog people. They love dogs, right?
They're not half man, half dogs, and that are huge. They're not massive dog people.
No.
Okay, just to clarify.
Okay, they really like dogs. Dogs are like their favorite things. I thought maybe we should try to guess what they would want as a dog pet, right? If they could have a pet of any of the dogs. I'll guess Jasmine, you've got to guess Brendan, because you're pretty much, you were good schoolmates with tradition.
Yeah. Disclaimer, if Brendan's response is, well, I would pick this dog, but in high school I would have picked this other one, that one counts for me too. I get that. That counts as a point.
Fair enough.
I'm going to guess that Brendan would pick Boss. I reckon Brendan's a Boss kind of guy.
He's a little dog. He's sort of cute. little scrappy but nice, and yeah, I reckon it's not a bad pick.
What's your pick for Jasmine's dog?
maybe Rex. Like, that was sort of the most helpful dog, probably, of the group. The one that was the most eager to help.
Is Jasmine practical? Is she the one saying, "This is no time for comedic relief. We need solutions now"?
Probably not, but I think she's like, "Oh, how can we help out here? What can we do? Like, let's see what everyone else thinks." Like, you know, I feel like that could be partly sort of, I think Chief, like, I reckon Chief could be in the mix just because I feel like that's sort of, Scrap Chief. I reckon Rex is going to go. I don't know the answers to this, so I'll text them now.
we'll get the results to that game, maybe by housekeeping, maybe yeah. You'll have to tune into our Avengers podcast.
do you know what Brent review of the film was?
I'm gonna guess he was a fan. I'm gonna guess he enjoyed the animation. Wow. Didn't even wait to the end of the credits. That's how confident he was.
He loves it because he loves dogs, he loves Japan, and he loves Wes Anderson, who just is the perfect mix.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll reveal in our verdicts whether we agree with Brendan.
Well, we agree. Is it the best Wes Anderson movie? We might have. Jazz said it was good.
So they didn't find it controversial, but Matt, you told me this was a controversial film.
Yes, there has been a bit of controversy. Maybe Wes Anderson's most controversial film. I don't know, Darjeeling Limited, I think, some people were fans of. But this one, this is the problem, is that there is a foreign exchange student, an American foreign exchange student, who seems to be the voice of truth to power. And some people have spoken or written about this being a bit of the white savior syndrome, where the white person comes in and is the hero for the Japanese people and the dogs. Thoughts?
I don't think she is the savior. I think she is someone we root for, but I think that the kid, Atari, I feel like he's the hero.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree that he is as much more of a hero than he is a Japanese character.
Because she does some interesting stuff with the scientist, but he's the one that builds a plane and flies to Trash Island. And, you know, we follow through the adventure more so through his eyes. So,
and I would say how the ending plays out, he actually has a slightly more key role in the sort of resolution to the story.
Yeah. I don't feel... I mean, I could understand why that might be a concern and that has happened in other films, but I feel like in this film, it was more like it was a team coming together. Isn't that what you want? You know, it's not just one of the good guys, one of the bad guys. It's like you have a nice little white girl, you have a nice little Japanese boy, and they both try and save the dogs.
Yeah, I like that. I would probably... I think even though I agree, I don't think it's... I do think it's not hurting the sole throw of the story. I do think it is a little problematic that in the school it's the white girl, it's the girl that has the real insight and really wants to speak up, and I feel like it's a shame. I feel like partly that may have been something like we're doing the languaging, just to say, a bit of subtitling and just... also been some points about some of the just over stereotyping, like, oh, here's the sumo wrestlers, there's the sushi, there's the sort of like stuff. So I actually do think it's problematic, but I don't think it's all ill intentioned. And I had some problems, as we talked about in our awards, with three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and its depiction of race. And I feel like one big problem that had is it didn't deal with everything as sensitively as it could have. And then there were also no strong minority characters in the film. And I think this film, even though I've still got some problems with it, because of the Atari, because of him being such a driving force for the story and the resolution, all that sort of stuff, it avoids the three billboards drama in my mind. So, somewhat problematic, but I think it's a bit complicated, would be my verdict on the controversy.
Here are the two lines that you have to walk. If every Wes Anderson film was about white people in America, it would be, the response would be, why do you not care about people of any other races? Why don't you want to tell a story from someone else's perspective? And then you tell a story in Japan with Japanese characters, and people are going to be like, that's cultural appropriation. That's stereotyping. And how are you supposed to show a culture without showing any of these common things? Like, do people not eat sushi in Japan? Is it racist or stereotypical to show people eating sushi? Like, I think it's all about your, what are you trying to say? If you're mocking the person, if you're like, ah, I Japanese person, all I eat is sushi, well, yeah, that's like racist.
Boy, but if that could get in line,
but if you delve into it and you go, this is the culture, look at the different types of knives, look at the different types of ingredients, look at the process, look at the skill that's involved, and look at the delicious sushi meal that is the result of that. I don't think that's stereotyping. That's just trying to engage with the culture. So I understand it's sensitive, but you gotta look at the intent. And I feel like it's quite clear that Wes Anderson was in no way trying to make light of Japanese people. He was trying to give us a glimpse into the world. And yeah, I mean, he makes like comedic movies. You know, the comedy's not supposed to be at the expense of Japanese people. It's just supposed to be part of the fun and the story.
And I think one of the critics actually came back, because some people were like, oh, this guy says Wes Anderson's racist or something like that. And he came back and said, look, I wasn't quite, well, no, I can't remember what he wrote. So look, I wasn't quite saying that. And they said, but sometimes you can have some unhealthy stereotyping and you can also give a homage to a culture and they're not always mutually exclusive. And even though I've got some issues with some of the things depicted in the film, I still think there's some really nice, well-intentioned elements to it as well. So, I don't know. I think maybe it could be done a little better, but I'm not. I wanted to talk about it because I want people to be like, oh, you were really throwing three billboards under the bus a couple of weeks ago, and now you're fine with this little number. So,
yeah. Well, look, we want to be respectful, but at the same time, you got to go based on the merits. And just because he's not Japanese doesn't mean he can't, you know, try and help set a story there, show us some aspects of the culture.
Yeah, and look, just full disclosure, we are two non-Japanese guys as well.
We are very, very white.
We are super white, us two. So if there's anyone that is less white than us and has some insights or perspective, feel free to send them our way. There's something we haven't covered well. Yes. So, but look, the film's beautiful. Because a lot of the film isn't about people, it's about the dogs. And the dogs are so great, and the way they interact. interact is so funny in like most Wes Anderson films, and I love the shots of them on the trolleys and the sort of, even though this is meant to be a horrible place, Trash Island, I wouldn't mind spending a weekend there and doing some of the stuff they were getting up to.
Yeah, probably doesn't smell great, but some fun ways to get around. It's not really meant for people or dogs. I think it's meant for moving trash. But you can, there's a great gondola, little cable car to take you across the island.
Yeah, it is interesting to what this island used to be, because I feel like it used to have like a theme park and a baseball stadium or a golf course and a factory and one day this was a thriving island of workers and amusements, sports.
It was the place to be.
Yeah.
How, normally you put your trash in the worst part of, your state or your country or whatever. If this is where they're putting the trash, how nice must the rest of the country be?
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is the crappiest baseball stadium of all the baseball stadiums. This is where we should put our trash.
Yep. So, yeah, maybe there's a prequel in this when we'll have Trash Island. Island Trash. They send all the trash to Trash Island. good movie. Maybe.
Does that lead us into our verdict?
I think so. I think we've delved into this a bit. We've talked about the dogs. We've talked about the story. We've talked about the controversy.
All right. Very good. Well, Isle of Dogs. I was intrigued. Fantastic Mr. Fox wasn't my favorite Wes Anderson film, but I did like it. So I was interested in the stop motion. I don't have too many stop motion animation films that are my favorite films of all time, but I was like, it looks like pretty interesting design. And I wasn't sure about the film for about the first 10 or 20 minutes. It seemed really quirky. And I thought to myself, are all Wes Anderson films this quirky? Are they intentionally this quirky? Do I even like quirky? Was I just at some point, just like an awkward teenager thinking I am quirky and therefore I'll identify with quirky things? And now that I'm 28 and married, do I not feel the need to identify with quirky things, and all of a sudden this quirkiness is just nonsense? But then I started to like it. I thought, nah, it's actually pretty funny. It's a pretty unique story. And I ended up buying into the quirkiness. It wasn't too quirky. It didn't... Ultimately, I came to the decision that it didn't seem forced. I felt the progression of the story and the character development sort of organically came from the setting and the premise. So ultimately, I ended up enjoying it. I feel like it kind of... I feel like it peaked maybe about three quarters of the way through, and sort of perhaps dragged a little, but ultimately I was satisfied by the ending. So I thought it was a strong outing, but not one of my favorite Wes Anderson films. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I think, I've enjoyed this movie. I thought it was good. Jonathan, where would you, what would the verdict be for how quirky it was on a scale of Mike Pence to Zooey Deschanel?
Ladybird?
Ladybird quirky.
Yeah.
I'll be Mike Pence to Zooey Deschanel. scale. This was a great. I really loved the shots, the look. I thought it was funny. I love, as I said, ragtag group, and I just really respond well to Wes Anderson's style of storytelling and humor, and I just love how you watch a Wes Anderson movie, it's like this quirky piece of art that I just really enjoy. It's never too long. It always just, they tell the story well. It's a nice story, good characters. For some of that insensitive stuff, I'll take a little bit off, and I'll sort of agree it didn't reach the heights of some of my favourite Wes Anderson films, like Moonrise Kingdom. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 as well.
There you go. We're on the same page there. Pretty strong score. Pretty strong score.
Yeah. It's not out of the contention for Screen Verdict Awards, I'd imagine, with that score. 2 8s out of 10, so it's sort of in the mix.
Yeah, depending on how strong the year is, that could sneak in, especially because there's some consensus there.
It could be the compromise. The compromise slot.
Now, perhaps there might not be time to do this fully. Maybe we'll do an abridged version. But if we crack open a quick housekeeping, a little Screen Verdict story. When Matt and I first came up with the idea to do a podcast, we thought, what could we talk about? And I was in full Wes Anderson mode at the time. I was catching up on all his films. I said, we should do a Wes Anderson rank. We should rank all of Wes Anderson's films. And Matt, what was your response?
Is Wes Anderson that great? Like, are people that interested in Wes Anderson?
Is anyone other than, like, 4 film students with us at Macquarie Uni going to listen to this podcast?
Yeah.
Let's go with something with some more broad appeal.
Cars 2.
So, but what I wanted to do, I thought we're reviewing a Wes Anderson podcast. Maybe, I'm not sure what it is, something like 217 podcasts later. Maybe we could take a quick look at Wes Anderson's reviews. Maybe we don't have time to rank them all, but just give like a general opinion on maybe what some of our favorites are. So we're going chronological order. 1996, Bottle Rocket.
I have not seen that one.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a cute little story, but didn't really hit the heights of most of his films that came afterwards. 1998's Rushmore.
I have not seen it.
I think you like that. Bill Murray is the lead in that one.
I've got to see that one. Yeah, no, I'm keen to see it.
I feel like that's a little, I don't know if depressing is the right word, but it's a little, there's some funny moments in it, but it's probably one of the least funny Wes Anderson films. It's more just sort of like an interesting, character tale, if you will. Followed by 2001's The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, I saw this one. I'd like to see this one again, but I remember when I saw it, I thought, boy, there's so much about this film. It's a bit overrated. There's like a few funny moments, but I wasn't really that invested in the story.
The Royal Tenenbaums, I think, is my favourite Wes Anderson film. I think the opening is absolutely brilliant. You know, the kind of storybook style. And visually, I think this is really where he kind of created the Wes Anderson style. There's kind of like pastel colours, that nostalgic feel. It's one of his funniest, but also the most touching. The soundtrack in it is great. Really hit some sort of artistic and emotional highs for me, The Royal Tenenbaums. Followed by 2004's The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Have you seen this one, Matt?
Yes, I have. I was really excited to see that one, because I love Bill Murray, and he was the lead in that one. And I like the sort of adventure elements of it, and I thought there were funny, quirky bits in it. I'd like to see it again. I'll see it again, but I was a bit underwhelmed by that one as well.
I really enjoyed the Life Aquatic. I think visually that might be his most impressive film. The life under the water, I thought was pretty amazing. I thought visually I really enjoyed it, but the story and the characters I didn't connect with as much as the Royal Tenenbaums. 2007's the Darjeeling Limited.
I can't remember if I've seen that one.
No wonder you didn't want to do a podcast on it. You're like, Jonathan, no one's seen these films. I haven't seen these films.
I definitely hadn't seen it at the time, but I may have seen it. Trowishing comes as I've fallen asleep both times I started watching it, and I can't remember whether I eventually got it seen. It didn't grab me the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I feel like this is perhaps it's an interesting setting, but I feel like the story. It's a very simple story. It's more just about the relationship between the brothers, as far as I remember. And I'd put it on a little bit of a similar level to Bottle Rocket, perhaps.
Okay.
2009's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I really like that one. I just thought, like, Wes Anderson's storytelling style lended it so well to, like, one of Roald Dahl's best stories, maybe my favorite Roald Dahl book, and it just, the animation was great, and the humor was great, and the characters were good, and the story, like, I just think it all worked in the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Fantastic Mr. Fox for the reasons you mentioned. Perhaps the only thing, and I'm not saying this is a limit of animation, because even though I've never cried in a Pixar film, it's possible that I got close. But I just don't think it hit the emotional highs of something like the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
2012's Moonrise Kingdom. You should listen to our podcast on it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Listen to that one. It was one of my... and I can't remember what score I gave it at the time, but that on rewatch has held up very well for me and is one of my favourite films of all time.
Yeah, not to spoil a six-year-old podcast, but I think I gave it an 8.5 and you gave it a 9.
I'm glad I did. I couldn't remember whether I loved it as much at the time or whether it's grown on me over time. So if I gave it a 9, I'm really glad. I think everything works so well in that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. That's one of his stronger films as well. The 2014's The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I really like that one too. It was really, really strong. The characters and the fun story and some good turns. I think that was enough. The winners, all the elements just came together beautifully. And it did well at the Oscars, that movie. And, deserved something. Should have maybe won one or two more, like a screenplay or something like that. So I really like that one.
Do you think Wes Anderson has picked up the what's his name? Woody, who's the guy? Woody Allen. Jeez. Do you think he's picked up a bit of that like Woody Allen habit of I've made a bunch of movies, should I just kind of pick movies to make based on where I'd like to vacation? Because after a while, look at him. He's picked all of these films. Where are they set? Well, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure they're all set in America until it's like, maybe I'd like to do a movie in India. Like to go to Budapest. Yeah, always wanted to go to Budapest. Japan. Yeah, I have to do some research in Japan. It's kind of like the Midnight in Paris, like, era of Woody Allen. Just be like, if I have to make movies, I might as well get a trip out of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. I don't know if he had to go to Japan for Island Dogs.
No. I bet you he did. He's like, with the studio, he's like, I need to do this trip. I feel like I need to do a 6-week trip. I just want to immerse myself in the culture, get some, some visual ideas or whatever. And they're like, no.
See a sumo fight, do do whatever other stereotypes they do in Japan.
Yeah, and the and the studio's like, nah, we're not putting that in the budget. And Wes Anderson's like, look, if I don't do it, if I don't immerse myself in the culture, people will say, look, I'm culturally appropriating without any knowledge of the culture that I'm talking about. And the studio was like, Wes, they're going to say that no matter what. We're not paying for you to spend 6 weeks in Japan and have to deal with the same PR problem either way, pal.
Yeah, like, we are not putting out a media release saying, no, he isn't culturally appropriating. He had a 6-week stint in Japan.
If there's one way to compound the problem, it would be to send you on a 6-week trip.
He spent 3 weeks in the Tokyo Hilton.
At least this way we can just claim ignorance. Like,
it's like, I'm going to give it away for Wes Anderson now. It's a bit like people who they go on a holiday somewhere and they come back and they talk like they are experts in that culture. This is how you hold the chopsticks, guys. This is how they're doing it in Beijing.
Yeah, what's worse? The guy that's like, oh, yeah, Japanese people, they like sushi. Or the person's like, oh, we spent 9 nights in Okinawa, and let me tell you, they love sushi. All right. Well, good. if you're right, if he didn't go, good decision on the studio's part there.
That's good. And Isle of Dogs, yeah.
What did you think? What did you think of Isle of Dogs?
Yeah, it was good. I don't think it's as good as his last couple of outings, but still, I think all the elements worked well enough.
Well, there you go. It was only 6 years overdue, but we finally satiated the Wes Anderson fans out there.
Maybe in a couple of months, I'll watch the ones I haven't seen and we can do a proper rank or something. But maybe it would be better if before then we did a Marvel Universe rank, because I feel like that might be a bit more on the pulse of the kids.
Yeah, we'll put it to a poll. Facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. If we were to do one rank and one rank only, would you rather see the Wes Anderson films or the Marvel Cinematic Universe ranked by Screen Verdict?
Ranks from Isle of Dogs would approve. He would like this method of us deciding what rank we did.
All right. Well, very good. That was a fun podcast. As we mentioned, could have Avengers coming up. Anything else you want to talk about, Matt?
Look, if you embody seeing quiet parties, that would be great to talk about. I know you've been jumping fans.
Oh, I don't know. Neither of us are very good on scary movies. We might have to wait till it comes out on iTunes so you can watch it at home.
Okay.
If we we'll be cutting apples the whole time.
I saw it with Bass's wife came and saw it with me in the group that I organised, you know, Mel. She jumped into me a couple of times.
to quickly explain the cutting apples reference, a couple of my high school friends got together. We were like, we're going to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I don't think any of us were particularly into horror movies, but we were all kind of pretending, yeah, we're not going to get scared or whatever. We can watch horror movies. And it starts getting tense and eerie, and you know someone's about to jump out or someone's about to die. You can just feel it in the movie. And all of a sudden, good friend and groomsman of mine, John Herdman, gets up. He gets up and he's like, "I'm just gonna go get some fruit. Anybody want an apple? I'll grab you an apple." We're like, "No, we're good." And so we're watching the movie and it's like scary and people are getting taken and skinned and captured and killed and we're all like, "Whoa, Like, it's getting crazy. And like 5 minutes later, John's like, I'm just cutting some apples. Does anybody want a slice of apple? I'm just cutting some apples in the kitchen, guys. So,
oh, that's right.
For years afterwards, we made fun of John, and whenever anybody was afraid of anything, it was referred to as cutting apples. So, I'll let you know on a scale of Granny Smith to apple pie, how much I needed to distract myself based on how scary A Quiet Place was.
It was hard to share the popcorn in Quiet Place.
Yeah. Corn chips was a bad choice of food to take to A Quiet Place.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway. So maybe we'll focus on some new HBO shows that I think you're catching up on, so maybe we'll do some podcasts on some of them as well.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Looking forward to that. All hope right. You enjoyed the podcast, and we'll catch you guys next week.
See ya.